Welcome back, baseball friends, to episode 74 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. The Nats GM Show is proudly sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. What is the No Halftime and No Halftime app, you ask? Well, let me fill you in a little bit. You're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team, but your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus Manny Machado, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. And we are live at Sabre Seminar with another Nats GM show. And I am proud and honored to be joined for the third consecutive year here at Sabre Seminar with Dave Cameron from Fangraphs, one of my favorite writers. Certainly everybody that's listening is one of their favorite writers too. So Dave, first and foremost, thank you so much. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me on again.
First place I want to start with you is the trade deadline we just got through.
Yeah.
Seemed a little interesting in some ways. The reliever market was really hot.
Yeah.
Maybe except for Melanson to Washington, but it seemed like the bats were, you know, kind of where we saw it originally. Just let's start there. First and foremost, your take.
Yes, I mean, certainly there were less good players available this year, right? So last year we had David Price, Johnny Cueto, Cole Hamels. We had some, like, real impact guys last year. This year, you have Jonathan Lucroy, who's kind of an impact guy if you buy into catcher framing, and if you buy into the value relative to a low salary, but in terms of, like, just on-the-field impact, Lucroy is not at that David Price, Johnny Cueto level. After him, it was a bunch of relievers, and like Carlos Beltran is a 39-year-old DH. I mean, like, it was really just like a lesser pool of talent available this year, which I do think reflects the fact that more teams are trying to go for it every single year, and then obviously more guys have signed long-term deals, so this free agent class sucks. This coming free agent class is terrible, so we don't have those pending free agents that normally get traded. I do think that the reliever market was really fascinating, and like the Chapman trade, I think, was a massive overpay for the Cubs. Like, I understand why they did it, but they overpaid. I don't think they actually gave up that much less for Chapman than the Indians gave up for Miller, and the Indians got two more years of Andrew Miller, who's fantastic and maybe even better than Chapman. The Melanson trade, as you mentioned, was, I think, a good deal for Washington. Brad Ziegler to Boston, they got, you know, hardly anything to get him. So there's some relievers who went cheap or fairly, and then you have the Chapman deal is really the outlier. Was like, that was just a crazy overpay. So I think in general we saw lower prices paid for lesser talents, except for the Cubs paid a premium for one guy.
So are we seeing that, I guess the Chapman deal, which was the first one, is, you think, going forward the outlier rather than where we're going to have to reestablish the reliever market?
Yeah, I do think the Chapman deal was like a perfect storm of the Cubs wanted a left-handed relief ace, and there was only one team who had two of those to sell.
Right.
So they really could only deal with Brian Cashman. They could only pay the Brian Cashman price because there was no other team to turn to. There was no alternate seller to kind of drive down the bidding. I think if Cashman really said, I want Kyle Schwarber for Andrew Miller, you can't have Andrew Miller, and they are in love with Kyle Schwarber, that they basically didn't have an alternative, right? So there was a team with a dramatic incentive to win, with one buyer and one seller, and not a competitive market. I think in every other instance we saw the Nationals or the, you know, the other contending clubs, they had options, so they paid lower prices. The Cubs did not have an option, so they paid a premium.
That's actually a fantastic take, and I haven't heard that. That's a good call. Next place I want to go is the Texas Rangers. We touched on it a little bit. I think you've probably ruffled some feathers in Ranger fan land, but...
What were your thoughts on what they did? I mean, is Luke Roy enough? Are they for real? Your thoughts at the deadline, just kind of your take on the whole Texas Rangers.
So I think the first half Rangers team was a 500 club. I know their record was better than that, but I think if you look at kind of how they won games, so they're 28-8 in one-run games, something like that, they won games in an unsustainable manner. I think if you look at their true talent level from before the trade deadline, I think they were basically a 500 team. I think adding Luke Roy over what they had at catcher is a big difference. I think when you look at the bullpen, Dario Alvarez, I think, was a really smart pickup, adding a left-handed slider-heavy guy who can get guys out at the end. And then in the Luke Roy deal, they got another relief pitcher as well, which gives them some depth, allows them to not have to rely on some of those middle relievers or last year's closer, Sean Tolleson, who's been terrible. So I think they dramatically upgraded their bullpen and their catching spot, which were huge weaknesses. These were two of the worst spots in the league for any team. So I think they made dramatic upgrades. I would look at them now as an above-average team, which I didn't see them before the trade deadline. So I really liked what they did. I thought that the Luke Roy trade for them was better than any deal any other team made. I still don't think the Rangers are a great team. They're not as good as their record. I think that, you know, as we saw with the Orioles a few years ago, you can go like 30-8 in one-run games and then regress back the next season. It's not necessarily a predictive thing, but I do think they're a better team than they were 2 months ago.
I don't think I've seen it online, but I just kind of want to get your take on the whole A-Rod situation and just the whole way it went down. And I think we're similar ages. It's we remember A-Rod being great, whereas I think the generation below us doesn't remember great A-Rod. Just your take on the whole way it played out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little sad. I mean, I think on talent, A-Rod is one of the best players to ever play the game. So I saw him when he got to the majors as a 19-year-old, and he had to unseat Felix Fermin to push him out of the way in Seattle. Clearly, 19-year-old A-Rod did not look like a steroid user, right? Like, he wasn't as big as he is now. I mean, he could have been using, who knows, but he didn't look like a guy was using. He was a 40-40 guy at shortstop, a really good defender, just an all-world talent. So for that guy to have kind of this poor of a send-off, I know Yankee Stadium cheered him and he had like a nice moment for himself, but also I think most of baseball is just kind of happy to see him go away, and like certainly he didn't get the farewell that like David Ortiz is getting, even though David Ortiz in the Mitchell report and like potentially could be just as dirty. I think the perception of A-Rod has a lot to do with his personality and some of the choices he made throughout the years and kind of burning a lot of bridges, and I think he doesn't have a lot of friends left in baseball. So I think it's a sad way for a great talent's career to end. Although I do think there's a decent chance we haven't seen the last of A-Rod. Knowing the Marlins and Jeffrey Loria's I'll do anything for attention, I would not be shocked if A-Rod was playing first base for the Marlins down the stretch.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either. I actually kind of expect it to happen in some ways. Next place, kind of Yasiel Puig in a different way. Thoughts on Puig, and would you gamble on him if you were a GM or in a front office?
I mean, it's a tough thing, because you look at what he was a couple years ago, and I think I had him at number 5 on my trade value list like 2 seasons ago, so this was recently one of the most valuable assets in baseball. But things have gone the wrong way, not just off the field, which has been well chronicled, but I think if you look at Yasiel Puig now, it seems pretty clear that we were overvaluing what he was as a player then. If you kind of look at the career trajectory of Yasiel Puig, when he got $42 million to sign out of Cuba, scouts thought it was the most ridiculous overpay anyone's ever seen. They were like, this is a lavish, ridiculous spending that only the Dodgers can do. This guy is not that good. And then he got to the his body changed dramatically from when people saw him in Cuba to when he got to the big leagues. You can speculate as to why. And then he gets to the big leagues and is better than anyone expects for about a year. Jeffrey Coor had a very similar story coming up to the big leagues, right? Like, as a good prospect, but not necessarily a franchise guy, had an amazing rookie season, and then people were like, look at this Jeffrey Coor guy. He's remarkable. And then his pitch discipline basically exposed him as not that great of a player, and he went on to have a career as a fourth outfielder. I wouldn't be shocked if Yasiel Puig was Jeff Francoeur with a tan, where you're like, this is really nice physical assets, but not a good idea what to do with the plate. Maybe not the kind of guy who's going to put in the work to improve himself. And I think, given his off-field issues, if you have a guy who's a serviceable player, it's probably not worth the distraction, the hassle to your teammates and coaches, if all he really is a right-hander who hits left-handers okay.
Yeah, good point. Final question I have for you, and it kind of came about when I was watching the Griffey Hall of Fame ceremony. It's just, I know you're, when I think Seattle Mariners, I think Dave Cameron. Right. Your thoughts on Edgar Martinez not being in, is, first of all, have you been driving that train, and just where are you with Edgar in the Hall of Fame, and kind of that whole subject.
So I would absolutely vote for him. I don't think there's any question that I think he's a worthy Hall of Famer. To me, the idea that, like, oh, he's a DH, so therefore I can't vote for a DH because he didn't play the field. If you're putting relief pitchers in, that argument holds no water whatsoever. Relief pitchers are far more specialists than designated hitters ever are, and designated hitters have a significantly larger impact on the game than any relief pitcher. When we're putting in mediocre relievers and guys who just accumulate saves for 600 innings, then you have to put designated hitters in the Hall of Fame. So I think the argument that a DH can't be voted in is ridiculous, and I think David Ortiz will shatter that notion. I think Ortiz getting in would have been good for Edgar, except for they changed the timeline, and so now Edgar will be off the ballot before Ortiz is in, so Ortiz won't help Edgar anymore. I do hope that Ortiz voters will look at them side by side and say, I'm planning on voting for Ortiz, and Edgar had a better career, so therefore I should vote for Edgar Martinez. But I haven't necessarily been driving the train super loudly because Edgar was basically caught in this bottleneck where when Bagwell's not getting in and Biggio's not getting in and Messina's not getting in and Schilling's not getting in, these guys who aren't tied to PEDs, who have obviously credible resumes, who are clear Hall of Famers, as long as they're not getting in, it's hard to make Edgar the one that you're really going to bat for, right? It's like Tim Raines next year. He's last year on the ballot. He should be the cause celebre for everybody. Let's get this guy in before he goes away, because Tim Raines had a better career than Edgar Martinez. So I think until we get towards the 9th or 10th year where Edgar's on in the last year of the ballot, I don't think he's going to get that close, because there's not going to be a big push to get him in over the other guys who are at the end of the ballot.
Yeah, sweetest right-handed swing I think I've ever seen in my life.
An amazing, amazing player. And I think, you know, when you look at the Hall of Fame, to me, the point of it is it's a museum, right? To, like, honor the baseball history and to tell future generations about guys. If you don't want to tell your grandchildren about Edgar Martinez, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, good point. Dave, thank you so much. Spot for your plugs here where they can find you online.
Yeah, Fangraphs.com, I write every day. And then we have a great team of writers, August Fagerstrom, Jeff Sullivan, really good guys, Eno Saris, a great crew at Fangraphs.com, so you can read us there every day. I'm at DCameronFG on Twitter. If you want to say nice things, you can find me there. If you want to say mean things, then you want to go to @BenLindbergh, and you can yell at him.
Thank you so much once again for sharing a few minutes before your lunch, and I just can't thank you enough.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Ryan.
Great seeing you.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
I really do appreciate it.